Keighley did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across London as you listen. This is their story. Healthcare training in Greenwich and Woolwich shows how artificial budget constraints block qualified graduates from filling roles the NHS desperately needs. Empty training places sit alongside unfilled wards, while treasury caps on public investment are treated as immutable laws of nature rather than political choices about where to direct resources.
My name is Keighley. I'm 27 and I live in Greenwich. My mum's a teaching assistant. My dad works for Royal Mail. And I grew up in Plumstead watching my nan struggle with diabetes. She was in and out of hospital constantly, and I saw how stretched the nurses were, always running, always apologising for being late, always doing three people's jobs. I studied biomedical science at King's because I wanted to understand the science behind her condition. But by the time I graduated, I knew exactly what I wanted to do next. I wanted to train as a nurse practitioner so I could be part of the solution, not just someone who understood the problem. I applied to Health Education England's Nurse Practitioner Training Programme in 2022. I'd done well at King's. I had healthcare experience from volunteering at the diabetes clinic where my nan went, and I scored highly on all their assessments. The feedback was positive. They told me the programme was fully funded but oversubscribed, and that I'd been placed on a waiting list. I thought that meant I'd get in eventually. There was funding, there were places, it was just a matter of time. 6 months later, I got a call from Health Education England. The woman on the phone sounded apologetic. Unfortunately, Treasury spending constraints have frozen new training places despite existing funding streams, she said. We cannot move forward with additional cohorts at this time. I asked what that meant exactly. She said the funding existed in their budget lines, but they weren't authorised to spend it. There is no funding, she said, though that wasn't technically true. There was funding, they just weren't allowed to use it. I tried a different approach. If AHEE couldn't take me, maybe individual NHS trusts could. I applied directly to Guy's and St Thomas's NHS Foundation Trust and Lewisham and Greenwich NHS Trust. Both had massive staffing shortages. Both desperately needed nurse practitioners, but both gave me the same response. Guy's told me they had reduced training budgets from NHS England. Lewisham and Greenwich said the same thing. We'd love to take you on, the training coordinator at Lewisham told me, but our training budget has been cut. NHS England has capped our spending. I needed to work, so I took a job as a healthcare assistant at Queen Elizabeth Hospital, Woolwich. It was good experience, but it wasn't what I'd trained for. I was watching the exact staffing crisis I wanted to help solve playing out every day. Nurses working double shifts, patients waiting hours for basic care, discharge delays because there weren't enough practitioners to assess people. And I was there, qualified and ready to train, filing paperwork and taking temperatures. In early 2024, I was talking to one of the nurses about my situation, and she mentioned that the training centre in Eltham had spaces. You should go and ask them directly, she said. Sometimes these things get lost in the bureaucracy. So I went to the Eltham training centre on my day off. I walked into the building and it was almost empty. Corridors that should have been full of students, simulation labs with all the equipment covered in dust sheets. I found the administrator and explained what I was looking for. She looked embarrassed. We have 20 empty nurse practitioner places, she told me. Three unused simulation labs. All the equipment is here. All the teaching staff are here. But we can't access the funding because of treasury caps on public investment. I asked her to explain what that meant. She said, Health Education England had the budget, but the treasury had imposed spending limits that meant they couldn't actually spend it. The money exists, she said, but we're told we can't use it. I stood in that building surrounded by empty training facilities and unused equipment, and something clicked. This wasn't about money being scarce. This was about money that existed being deliberately kept from the places it was needed. I started asking around among my former classmates from King's. Four of them were working as carers despite wanting to train as nurses. All of them had been blocked by the same thing: budget constraints, spending caps, funding freezes, all artificial. I went back to the Eltham Training Centre and asked to speak to someone more senior. The training director was honest with me in a way I hadn't expected. "Look," he said, "we've got qualified teaching staff sitting around doing administrative work because we can't fill our training cohorts. We've got simulation equipment that's barely used. We've got people like you who want to train, and people like our current students who need jobs when they graduate. But Treasury has decided that training healthcare workers is somehow too expensive, even though not training them costs us far more in agency fees and unfilled shifts." That's when I started to understand what was really happening. The government that issues the pound was telling us it couldn't find enough pounds to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The training centre existed, the equipment existed, the teaching staff existed, I existed, my classmates existed, the NHS trust that needed us existed. The only thing that didn't exist was the political will to connect all these pieces. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were, all of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says, "We cannot afford it," except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still working at Queen Elizabeth Hospital, still watching the staffing crisis unfold every day. But I understand now that what happened to me wasn't bad luck or bureaucratic inefficiency. It was a series of political choices made by people who had alternatives. They could have authorised Health Education England to spend the money they already had. They could have lifted the Treasury caps on NHS training budgets. They could have connected the empty training places to the people who wanted to fill them. They chose not to. And every understaffed ward, every delayed discharge, every exhausted nurse working double shifts is the consequence of that choice. This isn't just my story. It's the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare.
What Keely experienced has a name: impossible expectations. This technique demands a guarantee of zero waste or perfect outcomes before committing a single pound to public investment, a standard never applied to tax cuts or bank bailouts. Impossible expectations work by setting standards that no human institution can meet. A pharmaceutical company might demand that a new drug show 100% efficacy with zero side effects before approval, knowing this is impossible and effectively blocking all competition. The technique relies on perfection as the enemy of progress. In Keely's case, Treasury imposed caps on NHS training budgets by demanding guarantees that every trained nurse practitioner would stay in the NHS for a specified period, that training programs would have zero dropout rates, and that all spending would deliver measurable returns within preset timeframes. These demands sound reasonable until you notice they're never applied to other spending. Tax cuts for corporations require no proof of job creation. Bank bailouts require no guarantee of lending increases. Military spending requires no promise of measurable security improvements. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources: people, skills, materials, time. In Greenwich and Woolwich, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed, the people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Greenwich and Woolwich ranks 229 out of 543 English constituencies for deprivation. English Indices of Deprivation 20-25, MHCLG. The constituency has 644 registered charities, Charity Commission Register. Local organisations received £18.4 million in grants, 360 giving grant NAV. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.